I actually lied. I don't get a post-Easter nap because I have a six-year-old son who himself has feasted on jelly beans today. So I'm going to propose a wild, preposterous theory to you. That Mary Magdalene did not expect her beloved rabbi Jesus to take his last breath whilst hanging from a tree. I have been wrong before. People love to point out when I am, but I'm pretty sure I got this one right. I mean, after all, this is the man who brought her back to life once before, casting out from her seven demons, sending them off into oblivion. He is the one in whom she met God most fully, came to believe in a power greater than herself, a power that was right there for her to touch. She didn't just believe in God. She smelled him and heard him and felt his hands upon her head as he set her free. And then he was gone. His body broken, hanging on that tree. His body taken down, wrapped in cloth, and left to slowly decay in the garden tomb. Like, this was not something for which she was prepared. It just wasn't. And it was not what she expected. But I think we all can testify to the fact that life rarely is what we expect, especially when it comes to pain. Did you expect the layoff from the job that you poured your heart and soul into? How about that diagnosis that upended your life and thrust you into a world of unpredictability? What about the divorce that you never saw coming? None of us has had seven demons cast out from us. But if you have, you ought to sell the movie rights, because that would be a story for the ages. But I'm willing to bet none of you have. But we still have something in common with Mary Magdalene. We have all felt the crushing blow of unexpected tragedy, and we have all grasped at the frayed ends of sanity in attempts to make sense of it all. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the tomb. So she ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, and said to them, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." So, in the darkness, at the funeral of dusk, when the land was still in shadow, she sought the tomb of the one that she loved. But that was not the only darkness that prevailed. In the darkness of her own spirit, she went to the tomb. And for what? What did she expect? For solace? No, I think she went for solitude. To sit, perhaps, to sit in Shiva, to sit in mourning for the bodily death of Jesus, yes, but also for her own spiritual death. And aghast, she found the tomb empty and the body missing. And running as fast as she could, she ran to her friends, hoping against hope that they could offer words of comfort, sensible words full of meaning. They too did not know what to make of either his death or his disappearance. So they left. With dejected spirits, yes, but they still left. And they left her. Once again, she was alone, in pain, adrift on life's sea of unpredictability. But Mary stood weeping outside the tomb. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white sitting where the body of Jesus had been lying, one at the head of the and the other at the feet. And they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, "They have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him." Crying and wailing and weeping for her lost love, for her lost Lord, weeping, and even the presence of angels could do nothing to dam the flood of tears making their way down her face. "Heaven, have mercy," she might have shouted through her tears, distraught, life once again giving her something that she did not want, something for which she was not prepared. "I do not know where they have laid him. He was dead, and now he's gone. something inside of her broke. Something that had somehow survived the sight of her Lord breathing his last, splintering under the weight of such pain, that shelf in her heart upon which sat the smallest jar of hope and consolation broke, and that jar with it, fracturing, crashing. All is lost. All is lost. But then, another voice. Woman, why are you weeping? This voice, it came from the gardener. And so in her pain, expecting nothing but more heartache, she replied, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." Within that very ordered reply, I hear something else. "God, just let me find him. Just let me find him, and I will leave this garden of despair." But the voice spoke again. This time it came as lightning out of a clear blue sky. "Mary!" This time she heard not just the words, but heard the beating heart of her Lord, though she didn't quite recognize him. She heard his beating heart, and then her heart was flooded by the surprising, unpredictable grace of resurrection. Mary! By name, she was called out of her darkness, finding herself no longer alone in her grief. To be sure, the grief of what she had seen was real. These kinds of wounds never leave us. It was still a wound on her heart, and how could it not be, to have watched her Lord die so ingloriously? But here he stood. He stood before her, calling her by name, binding up her broken heart, his voice a curing salve. His resurrection, his defeat of death, it was her resurrection too. It was pure, unadulterated grace. Because that is what the resurrection of Jesus was to the world and is to the world. It isn't just his resurrection from the dead, but it's the promise of ours as well. Grace, that unmerited, undeserved gift from God that comes when we least expect it, but perhaps need it the most. From dark skies come twinkling flickers, glimmers of something more than the despair that we find ourselves in. Shimmering lights pointing the way to something much bigger than our pain, much bigger than anything that threatens to keep us cowering face down in the dirt of the world as it is. Not walking in the world as it could be. So yes, life is rarely what we expect, but sometimes what is found within that unexpectedness is a surprise of the grandest variety. Seeing him there, standing there, even though he was changed, that was a surprise of the grandest variety. The surprise to end all surprises. The claws of death too weak to hold him back. And he returned not just for himself to show off his power and his might. He returned because he wanted to share with us that very same power. And in Mary's story, we see this play out. For first, she ran to the disciples in pain and uncertainty, broken from her experience at the cross, broken from her experience of the empty tomb. But now she runs with purpose. She ran with legs propelled by a surprising grace, ready to proclaim the resurrection with lungs filled not with pain, but with a palpable urgency. I have seen the Lord. I have seen the Lord. I have seen love. I have seen life. I've seen the promise of my own life beyond the tomb, of my own life on the other side of this pain. I have seen the Lord. With her fingers, she could point and say, "Christ is there." Living proof he was that even from the darkest of hours, life can be changed, not ended. And even though his wounds remained in his hands and feet, They were no longer wounds that could hold him back, that could keep him down. They were rendered impotent in the face of a generative force so powerful that crushed bodies and cowering disciples could be transformed into beacons of hope for those who themselves feel that there is no hope left in their own story. And this story, this testimony, this proclamation, its power did not end there in a garden 2,000 years ago. It did not end with Mary's proclamation of the risen Lord. It only just began. And here, in this place, in this very moment, it continues. Because it continues in those of you who came here today bearing your own wounds, nursing your own broken hearts. We put on pastels and Easter faces, but we all bring pain to this place. But you're here. Your resurrection. It continues in me. On Friday, I celebrated 2 years of continuous sobriety. Haven't had the desire to drink since. I show forth resurrection. It continues each and every time you rest your hand on the shoulder of a friend and stranger and say to them, you do not have to suffer alone. It continues in this parish, finding new and creative ways to minister to our community. Continues in our children who learn in this place a better way to be human than what the world has to teach them. It continues in the hearts of those of you who suffer from broken bodies, yet you still find the resolve to spend yourself in the service of others. It continues and never ends and will never end as long as people like you and me share our own experiences of the resurrection, of finding grace in the midst of pain, of being surprised when we least expect it, of sharing our encounters with the risen Christ and sharing our experience of finding life outside of whatever tombs threaten to suffocate us. It continues. It moves forward. It brings people along in its wake, and it will never, ever end because life finds a way.